Today on the podcast, I interviewed Dr. Dan Bruce, an airway-focused dentist, as we break down how the shape of the roof of our mouth, called the palate, together with our tongue positioning, can affect many areas of our lives, starting in infancy. The palate and tongue don't just affect things like eating and speaking. These parts of our bodies are central to health, and in this episode, we discuss the connection of how these parts of our mouth affect the growth and look of our entire face, how we breathe well or not, if we have negative health outcomes like sleep apnea, and how it can contribute to behavioral problems like ADHD. The show notes are packed on this one, so be sure to check them out as well. Here we go.
Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes.
Staying truly deeply hydrated with minerals while trying to conceive, during pregnancy and birth, and throughout your breastfeeding journey is very important. And nowadays, there are more options for this than we can even count. For Dr. Leah and I, ingredient quality is of top concern, and that's why we love Relight electrolyte powders by Redmond Real Salt. Relight contains Redmond's ancient unrefined sea salt, which contains 60 plus trace minerals in and of itself. Relight powders conveniently contain the appropriate proportions and forms of calcium, potassium, chloride, and even two forms of magnesium, malate and glycinate. It tastes amazing, and my favorite flavor is strawberry lemonade. Use code HEALTHYMOTHER for 15% off your order of any of the other products that Redmond has to offer, including their OG sea salt, other seasoning salts, natural toothpaste, bentonite clays, and more. Happy hydrating. Okay, Dr. Dan Bruce, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast today. You are a doctor of dentistry and specializing in pediatric dentistry along with the palate expansion stuff, which I talk about all the time because my son is one of your patients, and I'm very grateful for you and your office and everything that you do. So I want you to just introduce yourselves to the listeners and talk about how you came into this sort of field of dentistry, because I do think it's really specific and an upcoming field. You know, you're obviously becoming very busy here in the Valley and there's such a need for it. So can you just tell us how you found it? And then we'll kind of dive into this whole world of airway and myofunctional therapy and tongue ties and the tongue, the palate, and all of it.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's not really a short story, so I'll have to start from kind of the beginning. I graduated dental school in 2005 from University of Washington. My dad is a dentist, so I went in with him. I'm a general dentist, so there are pediatric dental specialties officially. That I'm not a pediatric dentist. When probably 2 years out of practice, I started getting interested in treating adults with sleep apnea, so with oral appliance therapy, basically. So it's an upper and a lower appliance that helps to reposition the jaw while you're sleeping. So doing a lot of research on that, you can't help but talk about kind of craniofacial and developmental characteristics that lead to sleep apnea. So my daughter was born in 2005, and so I started seeing in my own kids some of these things that could lead to potential problems in the future, and of course wanted to get those fixed. So I did some training in what's called the MyoBrace system to start out, and then worked with Dr. Bill Hang doing an orthotropics mini residency, which is a way to kind of do a little more rapid expansion and movement of the jaw. And then after that, had a patient move from California who was in ALF treatment, which is advanced light force orthodontics, and needed someone to take over her case. So, already being busy, but taking on more, I ended up going over and training with the ALF Educational Institute and Dr. James Bronson for 3 years. So that's been kind of the background of how I got into doing airway type treatments and early orthodontics. I definitely did not think I would end up seeing kids, you know, when I started. I actually was interested in prosthodontics and in the sleep apnea, but it's quite fulfilling to see a kid get on the right path, and you can have such an impact on them that it's been a really great part of practice.
Okay. So, and I just want to repeat a couple of things that you said. So in case anybody doesn't know what we're talking about here. So the ALF, A-L-F, stands for Advanced Light Force
Orthodontic Technique.
Oh, wait, Advanced Light force orthodontic technique. What's the F? light force.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's basically, it's a palate expander that does not look like a palate expander in the classic way that I think that you and I grew up with them, which is like the turnkey thing that goes over your palate. And one time I remember when I had those, I had really, really bad orthodontic health as a kid. And I had braces for 3.5 years. My teeth were like a jumbled mess. And one time I had a palate expander that I was eating a peach, and a long, long, long string from the peach got wrapped up all around it and was trailing down my throat. And I was like choking and gagging and throwing up. And it was really awful. And so this little device that we're talking about that my son has and that you specialize with does not even go across the palate. It almost looks, for people who don't know what it looks like, to me, I was surprised. It looks like a retainer that is kind of like cemented. Well, it's not cemented in, but it's held onto the inner rim of the teeth, and it does a gentle expansion. But can you kind of compare and contrast for us why you prefer to use something like an ALF versus one of the turnkey or rapid palatal expanders? Because I think that this is something that people don't realize there's quite a difference with.
Yeah. No, great question. So the there is a suture between the two maxillary bones, so the two upper jaw bones. They kind of come together right in the middle of the palate there. And so a rapid palatal expander is kind of the only way you can get true palate expansion through that turnkey mechanism before that suture is closed. So bone is kind of deposited there, things grow wider. With rapid palatal expander, that suture is kind of split and there's a space in there, and then that you know, get the width and they stabilize it. The ALF is I always describe it as kind of a facilitator of facial growth. So just pushing on the ALF itself is not going to do as much as a rapid palatal expander. Ideally, during facial development and growth, we know that there's a couple main things that kind of drive that. The first is the force of the tongue pushing up on the roof of the palate. So having that kind of peristaltic swallowing motion that starts with ideal kind of nursing in infancy. The second thing is kind of chewing force. So they've done some studies and they looked at different cultures and what they ate, and found that the harder the food they ate, the more developed the jaws were. So we know that bite force helps to create bone. So bone responds to the bite force. So the whole kind of ALF approach, which involves three things. So the first thing is the ALF appliances, which provide gentle light force that is the light wire force of it is not super rigid. It's kind of more trying to guide and direct and facilitate the growth of the jaw. The second is myofunctional therapy, which is the training of the tongue to swallow ideally. So you want ideal tongue rest posture, which is the tongue fully on the roof of the palate. And then you also want ideal swallow posture, where the tongue kind of peristaltically moves food down the back of the throat. So not only does that help develop the bone, it also helps to remodel the soft tissue of the back of the throat so that it performs optimally. And then the third thing is osteopathic therapy. So that's when Dr. Nordstrom, who invented the ALF, started with working with an osteopathic therapist to find the right, you know, amount of advancement of the ALF devices, find the right kind of tension on the wire and the size and gauge of the wire and the designs in order to kind of facilitate what we would call ideal or normal growth, not only in width, but also forward. And there are ways to do this with traditional orthodontic techniques. I prefer ALF because I feel like it's the least kind of invasive aggressive movement of the bones. And so we're trying to really push the body into a place that it wants to go. Now, if you just use ALF, but the patient continues to breathe through their mouth, we're not going to get the same results. Like you've got to get the patient to be able to breathe through their nose properly. You want to also have them chew properly. If you have, say, a tongue thrust where the tongue kind of squirts out to the side on chewing and the tongue squirts forward, you won't get proper facial and growth development. So it's really doing all three of those things that you get the best result with the ALF appliances. It works very well when the kids are fairly little and we've got all this growth potential. It can be helpful for certain cases in older patients too. I treated myself with an ALF and had some really good benefits to it. But you just don't get that growth potential that you have in a 4-year-old. You're just trying to get them on the right track and move them into ideal growth parameters.
What age would you say is ideal to start getting something like an ALF?
Well, as soon as possible, right? So, I've treated 3-year-olds before, but they have to be fairly compliant because we do need to put the appliances in. Like you were saying, we use a composite resin, not as really a glue to the appliance, but as more creating some contour that the ALF kind of clips into. So baby teeth are a little smaller than adult teeth. They're not as tall. So we need to kind of create that contour that the ALF will clip into. But yeah, we've been for kids that can tolerate it, it can be a very successful treatment.
Okay. And then I did just want to back up in case anybody's listening to this and they're like, what in the world are these people talking about? So this is what we're talking about as something that you may need to be looking at with your own children or with your babies or your future babies is the idea that palate width in your mouth, the roof of your mouth is called your palate. And what should be happening is that our baby's tongues should be resting on the roof of their mouths and able to continue to push up onto that space. And this facilitates, this is sort of the way that the intelligence system of the body works. This facilitates the expansion of that palate as the whole face and cranium is growing as they are getting older and older and older. And then it should then also swallow properly, which is like back and down instead of out. And when the teeth are coming in, this allows a nice wide palate, allows for room for all of the teeth to exist in our mouths. When we begin eating food, you know, at half a year old, you know, around a year old, we should be offering our babies, I mean, as it's developmentally appropriate and through childhood, firmer foods than what we are in modern day. Because if we think about how we've adapted and developed throughout history, there was a lot more fibrous, hard, chewy foods. And this would then develop the masseters, which are the muscles in the cheeks, the jawbone. Just like we know that, you know, people who are older and have osteoporosis, one of the best things that they can do is lift weights. Because when you're pulling on the muscle and the muscle has to pull on the bone, that's going to create new bone growth. And it's obviously the same thing with children. And if we are not really using our cheeks because we just eat this very soft, processed, modern food all of the time, we are not going to have that proper development of our jaw and our whole entire facial structure. And if people don't know this about the skull, that's totally fine. I don't know why you would know this unless you were maybe in a medical field, but the skull is made up of multiple different bones, right? And the sinuses are behind the nose and underneath the eyes, and they are pockets of space, of airspace, that, as you know, will get filled up with mucus and gunk and things. You can get sinus infections. And the way that your sinuses develop is also dependent upon the way that your entire mouth and your jaw develops. And so what we don't want is that babies who are born now in this modern time, who maybe have a lip or tongue tie, which is something that I talk about all of the time on my social media and on this podcast too, because all of my kids have been lip and tongue tied. I think at one day we will figure out what's the environmental plus epigenetic kind of reasoning behind this increase in tongue and lip ties. And there is some level of overdiagnosis, of course, but I think even adjusted for that, there's still an actual true increase in what's happening where these babies are unable to nurse or whatever it is that's happening. Then if we have a kid though, let's just pretend that they're lip and tongue tied, they don't ever get a frenectomy. It's never resolved. So a frenectomy meaning like a revision or however you want to call it, where it's with a laser or scissors, although we always prefer the CO2 laser to release the tongue so that it has the proper range of the motion so that it can get to the roof of the mouth and it can do the peristaltic motion, meaning the up and down kind of undulating wave-like motion that it needs to do on the nipple in order to breastfeed successfully. Mm-hmm. Because women can have a lot of pain in their nipples or bleeding or chafing, mastitis, clogged ducts, if a baby's latch is not proper. Also, babies have to work very hard to get milk if they are not efficiently latching onto the nipple the way that they need to. And if people have ever milked a cow or watched people milk a cow, you cannot just like squeeze it. You have to do this particular motion in order to get the milk out. Same thing with babies on a nipple. And so they will often then exhaust themselves, or mother's milk supply never really gets fully established in a way that is supportive of the baby alone as an, like, you know, exclusive breastfeeding, because over time there wasn't enough milk removal from the breast. And there's all of these things that go into this, right? But so let's just pretend that that's what happens. Mom isn't really successful with breastfeeding. doesn't think she has enough of a supply, or there's so much pain and an issue with it in the very beginning of breastfeeding because baby's tied. So then now this baby goes on through their life. Maybe they're 6 months old and they're starting to have food introduction, or they're 9 months old and they actually have this tongue in their mouth that doesn't have this proper range of motion. And they're doing things like chewing it and spitting it out, or they're feeling, or they're maybe developing some kind of sensory weird situations with food, or they're really not into food. They don't want to eat food. They are choking and gagging more than they should be, different things like that. And a lot of that is because if a baby doesn't feel safe to be able to manipulate the food in their mouth properly, because their tongue doesn't have the range of motion that it needs to do, then, you know, it's going to feel like a bit of a scarier process. So anyway, let's fast forward now, 5, 6, 7 years old, this kid is all, you know, they're all of their baby teeth are in, and there may be some of their adult teeth are coming in, and their mouth is very crowded. Their palate is very high and narrow. They're maybe having sleep issues, or maybe you as a parent don't actually even know they're having sleep issues, but they're diagnosed with ADD or ADHD, something like that. And they come to, say, me as somebody who sees pediatrics, or you, and we're kind of looking at their mouth. We're looking at this whole picture going, oh my goodness, okay, this child is tongue and lip tied. And the lip tie doesn't matter as much at that age. But the tongue tie prevented this overall growth and structure of a widening of the palate for these teeth to come in. Also, now their tongue is not really on the roof of their mouth ever. And when they're sleeping, they're having something called sleep disordered breathing. So they're maybe snoring, they're grinding, they're breathing out of their mouths, they're having constant sinus issues, or maybe it just sounds like they can't really breathe out of their nose for some reason and you don't know why. Or maybe they've been told that they have swollen adenoids and tonsils, or they've had a tonsillectomy, and, you know, something like that. There's a lot of different ways that this can happen, but that is such a classic, very common story. And then these people go on to be adults and they maybe never get this resolved, or they don't know that it's a problem, and they do develop sleep apnea, which puts you at risk for different heart diseases and obesity. It's not something to be taken lightly. And I think that that's why you and I are so passionate about this, because we as preventative medicine physicians and doctors, we love to help families not have to go down that path and not have to have these unnecessary interventions when all it needed to happen in the very beginning or in the early childhood time was to, you know, work on their mouth structure. And so that's what you and I are doing here. This is like the whole point in myofunctional therapy too. I just really wanted to give that a definition quickly, in case people are like, what are you saying? It's, you might also see the term as orofacial myofunctional therapy. And it's a very funny tongue twister for what it is, because it's all to do with the tongue motion and, you know, the way that your mouth works. You'd think there's only one way that you can swallow, but this is not true. There is a lot of different ways you can swallow. And over time, if our tongue is constantly pressing forward, it can press on the teeth and move them. It can, cause problems with your speech sounds when you're a child and you're growing up. You know, there's a lot of different things with this, but I think in relation to ALF specifically, we need the child to learn to keep the tongue to the roof of the mouth, keep their mouth gently closed, lips closed, breathe through the nose, and work with this whole system in the way that it quote unquote should be happening, so that we can prevent this whole sequelae later on of, you know, the snoring and the apnea and all of these different things. So, okay. I just wanted to give that big, long background story because I do think that it gives context to why this is important. And with palate width and palate expansion and whatever is all happening, it's not just about teeth. It's not just about sleeping. It's not just about the way that your kid's face looks. It's all of these things. And they all really do matter. And what I am seeing a lot of too is that this is beginning in childhood. And so can you talk a little bit about how, well, in your opinion, where does frenectomy play into this? Do you see that kids who maybe aren't given a release when they are little infants, does it stretch and become functional later on when they're kids? Or do you see that they really need to get released? What percentage of your population do you think is getting released when they're children? And then I know that you had just said too, before we started recording, that you just had a frenectomy yourself mm-hmm. 2 years ago as an adult. So can we talk about that?
Yeah. So there's a lot there. I'll try to couple things. I mean, the first is palate width is just one thing. The position of the maxilla in the face is a three-dimensional problem that we're trying to solve. We want width, and we want AP, anterior posterior growth. We also want it kind of up close near the cranial base. So your head is the cranial base where your brain sits. So with poor tongue posture, lack of chewing force, maybe a tongue thrust or mouth breathing, everything moves down, back, and in. So we want to bring everything wide, out, and up. And that will allow for better posture because you're the one thing you have to do is breathe, and your body will contort to get air through your airway. And so if you know, the upper and the lower jaws are back too far, your head kind of comes forward because you've got to be able to breathe, which we see as adults brings all sorts of stress. So like I said, it's not just teeth. It's not just palate width. It's a three-dimensional object. The way I kind of explain to patients is there's a concept known as the functional matrix theory in dentistry. And it's that the function of the soft tissue dictates the position of the hard tissue. So soft tissue being the tongue, the lips, you know, even kind of breathing forces can do that. And then the hard tissue is the bones, the teeth, all that kind of stuff. So the ideal thing to happen is that when a baby is born, the tongue is functional. And so if there is a tongue tie, which as we don't really know why there's so many tongue ties, you kind of ask what percentage of my patients have tongue ties. Well, a high percentage of my patients have tongue ties. And I don't know if that's because there's a higher percentage of them happening or because they're coming to see me, you know, because they've done a lot of research. So a lot of patients have tongue ties. So there's some tongue ties that are just, yeah, slam dunk. My son, for example, had a grade 4 tongue tie, less than 25% of natural range of motion. And that was part of the reason I got into this. So we did not do a freedom release as a baby because he was a good nurser. He was gaining weight. However, he then started mouth breathing because he could not get a seal on his palate because his tongue was so tight. And that led to, you know, all sorts of other issues with sleep and development, things like that. So we did get to him at age 5 and do a freedom release with myofunctional therapy, ALF therapy, that whole stuff. And that's definitely, you know, if we'd seen him as a baby, we probably wouldn't have needed all that treatment. But at 5, he needs less treatment than he did at age 12. So that's kind of the theory behind ALF, is get that growth going as fast as you can. So if, you know, if the babies are having hard, raw food, if their tongue's able to function like it's supposed to, the force of the tongue is pushing everything out. If you do have a tongue thrust, and there's different types of tongue thrust, there's an anterior tongue thrust where the tongue kind of pushes through the front teeth. There's lateral tongue thrust where it pushes through to the side. There's unilateral tongue thrust where it's only one side, and you'll see changes in facial development. You'll see deeper overbites. You'll see jaws retrude. You'll see tilts in the whole head where everything gets torqued to one side. And that's that whole functional matrix theory, that the position and function of the tongue and also the compensatory mechanisms of the cheeks. If you have a tongue thrust, you have to then have tight cheeks because food will just fall out of your mouth. All those pressures are what helps kind of grow and develop patients. So a lot of people say, well, genetically, I just have, you know, a jaw that's too far back. But I don't believe that's true. You may have genetic risk factors for it, but it's really the function of chewing, swallowing, breathing, and then also, you know, genetics, inflammatory components, all that kind of stuff play a role in it for sure. Your question was,
yeah, about tongue ties, but really quick, I did just want to say, if anyone has not seen the pictures, go to Google and type in myofunctional therapy before and after or something like that. And it will blow your absolute mind how much somebody's face can change from doing exercises with your tongue and chewing properly. And especially as little kids or, you know, through the teen years, even as adults too. But for children, we really do have this opportunity that if you see that your child's jaw, like their chin, if you see in your child's profile, for instance, this is a good little just easy way to look at it. If the tip of their nose and the bottom part of their chin are not in about a straight line, when their eyes are looking forward at like the horizon, you know, you need to make sure that the head tilt is proper. If it's going back, if like the chin is, you know, closer back towards the child's ear or something like that, this is a little bit of a recessed jaw, or maybe it's a largely recessed jaw. And this is something that is going to affect, could affect their entire life in lots of different ways. On a shallow side of things, it can affect the way that they appear, you know, and they won't have a nice strong jawbone, or they can have that kind of long face syndrome. If you type into Google long face syndrome, you'll know exactly, you'll start to be like, oh, I've seen people like that. Like, what is that? Why, you know, we draw cartoons like this a lot of the time too, where it's like, what, why is there sort of a, you know, these people aren't related. It can happen in all different ethnicities and things, but it's, you know what it is because for their whole entire life, likely, I mean, I'm not going to say that I know this for sure, but there is a reason why their craniofacial development has happened the way that it has. And it's a small little jaw. Probably their tongue is down at rest all the time when your tongue is supposed to be up and your lips sealed and your teeth gently together at any given time. And I talk about this, I harp on this often. If you are not eating, talking, or drinking, your tongue needs to be fully sealed and suctioned to the roof of your mouth, your teeth gently touching and your lips closed. If we are just hanging our mouth open and our tongue is down, we are not having a proper oral resting posture. Even if you are breathing through your nose, and even if you think you're breathing through your nose all night long, you know, this is the idea of mouth taping and mewing. If nobody's ever heard of mewing, it's M-E-W-I-N-G. You look into before and after pictures of people who are mewing, which is really just these exercises that are, it's not really myofunctional therapy, but it's kind of just like these quick things that people do where they're like chewing really, really hard mastic gums or pieces of silicone or, you know, and then they're doing these tongue press exercises on the roof of their mouth, but it's still changing their entire face. And it's, you know, there could be good or bad because we're not necessarily addressing the root cause when we're doing mewing in that kind of a situation. But I just want to say that there is so many reasons for this to be important, if not just for the aesthetics or just for the ability to have the full range of motion of your mouth so that you can eat food comfortably and not have weird sensitive sensory issues with your eating or speech sounds and speech impediments. You know, like all my kids have had speech impediments. It's like, this is a track that my husband and I are down for the long haul, I think, because we have so much that we have to work on. We're two people with the genetics, I guess, plus this environmental factor, whatever it is, where our kids are all tied. They all have these very high, narrow palates. And two, as a parent, just even on this one little tidbit of the idea that when the tongue is latched to the roof of the mouth, when it's suctioned up there as it should be, it's giving your vagus nerve some input, a sensory input that helps. Your vagus nerve is your main parasympathetic chain of your nervous system. And it's giving that a little like coaxing rub basically that is activating your parasympathetic nervous system, which is your calm, rest, digest, chill out, you know, feel safe, feel good. And from little babies, this is why when babies don't necessarily get this input, they'll suck on their thumb or, you know, they're extreme pacifier users or whatever, because their brain and their development, they want it so badly. They want to get that input to the sucking, as also it's just normal for infants to have and want a need sucking as a main kind of action in their life. It's one of their needs. But anyways, this is something that can come to play and manifest as like unruly children or who are very disruptive or who have these ADD, ADHD symptoms or who are very, very like riled up and hyper. And, you know, it's one piece, of course, but often those children too, if you were to do a sleep study on them, they are having apneic events all night long, meaning they're, you know, having sleep apnea moments where they're stopping breathing, or maybe they are mouth breathing. They're just not having that good deep sleep, because when they lay down and their mouth is open and they're breathing out of their mouth, or maybe they're sort of partially breathing out of their nose, but then their airway is getting compromised. And so then they're grinding their teeth and they're snoring. And these are all things that disrupt our brain's ability to reach this deep sleep that we need, and especially as little children whose brains are growing and developing so fast, they need so much sleep. They need this restorative time. They're not getting it. Their brain is on a sympathetic nervous system state all night long because it's getting a lack of oxygen. And so it's grinding and snoring to wake themselves up just enough to open up that airway so that they can get the proper oxygenation that they need. So their nervous system is on alert. It's going, oh my God, you guys, oh my God, we're not getting the oxygen we need. Like, what do we do? What do we do? What do we do? All night long. And yes, it seems like your child is sleeping, but they're really not getting that restful sleep. So then they wake up in the morning and they're groggy or they're upset, or you'd think that that's how it would mostly manifest, but it doesn't tend to be that. It tends to be very hyper and inability to stay focused and listen, and they're adversarial and whatever. So there's a lot of different things here that come into this. But anyway, back to the tongue tie thing, I just wanted to ask you how you see that it relates, like if a child at infancy doesn't get a revision, do you see that it's, they do always usually need to get them as a older child or at some point in their life, or does the rest of the shape of the mouth kind of compensate? What do you see with that? Yeah. And now a moment from our sponsor. If you are looking for a delicious and effective immune supplement that your entire family can use, from children through adults and even while pregnant and breastfeeding, look no further than the needed immune support powder. With elderberry, zinc, pre and probiotics, beta-glucans, and arabinogalactans, the needed immune support powder is a very tasty berry treat that you can easily mix into water, yogurt, popsicle recipes, smoothies, gummies, and more. It's something that I always have on hand and give at the first sign of illness to any of my children as well as myself. Give it a try by visiting thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Again, visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%.
Yeah, so if a patient has a tongue tie, which results in inadequate range of motion for swallowing and chewing and mouth tongue posture, then the tongue, the mouth will collapse inwards, right, from that. And so ideally the way we do it is try to recapture some of that form by widening and moving the jaw forward. And then at that point, then go through the myofunctional therapy. So some kids, again, where I got distracted last time, some kids need that freedom release. It's just very obvious. They're very, very tight. My son being one of those. Other kids, it's somewhat tight, but maybe when they get more space, they have more body work, they do myofunctional therapy, they may be able to stretch and compensate for it, or not compensate, but to be able to achieve that ideal posture. So we always do start with myofunctional therapy, and the goal of a freedom release is to allow the tongue to achieve the myofunctional therapy goals. Sitting on the roof of the palate, I always tell people, yeah, it's lips together, tongue up, and I say teeth slightly apart.
Okay.
But if you can't do that and your tongue is tied, then go through therapy, see if you can reposture it. If you can't, then we go through and we do the releases. So it's the goal of the release is just, again, to achieve ideal myofunctional therapy goals.
Okay. And adults still really are benefiting from this. You're seeing this all the time.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple, you know, one thing that's interesting is I wouldn't say we know a lot about kind of the nervous system benefits of like ALF treatment or expansion or tongue posture. Thinking of one patient who came in who was in her mid-teens, and she was having just constant headaches. Like it was all the time. We ended up, and she had a pretty significant tongue tie and a lateral tongue thrust. So we put an ALF in and her headaches went away instantaneously.
What?
Which is interesting. And,
wow.
And, you know, there's all sorts of potential mechanisms for why that might happen. It could be the pressure on the roof of the palate, which was helping kind of balance. It could be the relaxation of the muscles, because when we do the ALF, we do open the bite just a little bit. The jaw can shift forward, so it's not putting as much pressure on the back of the teeth. There's any number of reasons why that could have happened. And then we did some expansion and some protrusion of her teeth. We ended up doing a phrenectomy, which then helped everything kind of stay, kind of hold. So I think her freedom was a huge causative factor for why she was having all these compensatory muscle areas of muscle tightness. But just doing the freedom release by itself probably would not have been super successful because everything was so held back. You know, the teeth were so held back. We wouldn't have had room to reposture the tongue, even if we'd given it that room.
Yeah, it's multifactorial. It's like, and same thing with doing the releases, when you're going to do them and when they are very appropriate. It's not just that, right? It's also, especially when they're infants, it's also doing the body work. So
yes.
It's not really myofunctional therapy at that point with an infant, but it's like the craniosacral therapy or osteopathy, and then plus the suck retraining exercises or mouth work exercises to help not only just keep the wound from reattaching, but also help the baby kind of know how to function and work their new mouth, which is really interesting. I love that you brought up headaches, because I think as adults who maybe would benefit from something like this, whether it's release, ALF, palate expansion, something in this world, which is there like an one singular name for this, all of this stuff we're talking about, or not really?
I mean, the large overarching name would probably be airway-centric dentistry.
Okay. Yeah. Airway. It's all about airway.
There's a lot. I mean, I would say ALF is about airway, but it's also about balance of the fascia and muscles and a lot of other things. But anything that's trying to get more space for the tongue and also help to reposition the jaw and has a myofunctional therapy centric approach would be considered kind of airway centric dentistry.
Okay. So with this kind of airway stuff that we're talking about, there needs to be like even a more inclusive name because there's so much other, but yeah, I see what you're saying. Okay. So about the headaches, I think that adults just walk around thinking, oh, well, I just have TMJ problems. I just have migraines. Oh, my upper back is just shaped like this and our necks go forward. This is just how it is in my family. And it's like, well, or maybe all of you guys are tied. And mm-hmm. You all have this same morphology. And if you were to get a release and work on these different things, I think the posture side of it is so fascinating because you see people, especially now, of course, with computers and phones, the hunching forward and the text neck and all of that stuff is even worse. But even without that, there are this sort of head posture leaning forward. And what it's trying to do, what we don't even realize that our bodies are trying to do, is open up our airway. And one of the things that when we were working, well, we're still in the midst of working with you with the ALF with our son, he's 8, that really surprised me is that one of the things that goes into this whole process is to do a CT scan that's like a 3D, it goes all the way around the head. It's called a cone beam scan. And it's checking for, well, it's how you get some of your width measurements, right? But then we're also looking at the adenoids and the airway and what's happening there. And it can also show a deviated septum. I had no clue that my son had any kind of airway issues. That was not even our intention or goal with this. We just knew he had a very narrow palate and it was high from years and years of thumb sucking and that we wanted to give him, you know, do the best that we could to help his whole development and everything. But he did have that posture that I'm talking about, which runs in my family. And we would always tell him and his neck, I mean, ever since he was a little baby, he would always just kind of hang his neck forward. And you in your office take photos of these progress pictures of the way that their posture changes over time. And his posture is changing. Thank goodness. I'm so happy about that. But I was also so surprised to see on the cone beam scan that he does have swollen adenoids that were pushing into his airway and he has a slightly deviated septum. And I'm just like, you know what? This is crazy because I just would have never known. And in the podcast episode, I'll put it in the show notes that where I talked with this labor and delivery nurse named Ann Gilligan, one of the things that we talked about in that episode that blew my mind was that babies who spend a significant portion of the labor in a posterior position, occiput posterior, often have deviated septums. And it is something that in an infant takes a like 1 week of a nasal splint to fix a deviated septum in an infant. And it's a huge deal for an adult to fix a deviated septum. And that in her opinion, she thinks that it should be something that is really assessed at birth because of all of the different ways and reasons that this can affect breathing later on. And, you know, again, all the tongue positioning and everything. And the reason why we even got into that conversation was because I was asking her if she has noticed that babies who have a hard time rotating. So this is like chicken or the egg, right? It's so hard to tell, but it's like babies who seem to have a hard time rotating through the birth canal. Does she notice that those are also then the same babies that end up having things like torticollis and maybe they have ties? And that is what I think happened with my own son is that he was so tied and he was tight and he had this little torticollis. And so he couldn't rotate properly through the birth canal. He was posterior for most of it. Maybe his posteriorness during the labor is what caused his deviated septum, but it was all really caused because of the tongue tie because he couldn't rotate and do the things that he needed to do. Who knows? I mean, it's all speculation, but I do think it's so fascinating to connect all the dots and be like, wow, all of these things being connected and then how this, if our goal is to raise the happiest, healthiest generation of kids that we can raise, right? Like that's one of my goals. That's probably one of yours as well. This is something that has to be talked about. It has to be. It's such a root cause of so many problems. I love it.
I think that those two things, first of all, just talking about the whole, how things come together. There's a great book called The ALF Approach by Dr. Tasha Terzo-Moore. She's an osteopath who had worked with Derek Nordstrom and just as done a ton for ALF. She was part in my training. And so she talks about, you said I mean, you can call it birth trauma or birth challenges or, you know, things like that, that can result in strains in the whole body and the head and how things work. And so, yeah, getting treatment right away can be super helpful. So having body work can be very helpful. The second thing is, you know, when we do those cone beam scans, we have a low dose protocol for kids, which is great. And we can really pick the right size. So we can see, you know, use the smallest size possible. The cone beam protocol is not like a medical CT scan. It's taking incremental slices and then using a computer to kind of bring them together. So we don't have to use as much radiation dosage, which is important. So they are low dose. The second thing is, you know, you can, like an ENT can go in and do a fiber optic scope and look through the nose. They can diagnose a deviate septum. They can look at tonsils. They can look at adenoids. So the cone beam scan is not necessary. I mean, that's a really awesome ancillary finding. We do it because anytime we're moving teeth around, we've got to know a few things. We've got to know, are all the teeth there? Are they rotated? Are they, where are they? So that we can start moving things around. So if you, you know, there's a small percentage of patients who just don't have permanent teeth. And it's super important to know where those might be. It could be in the front, in the incisor, could be in the premolar. So it's standard of care to have some sort of an image that does that. But yeah, the tonsils and adenoids are incredibly helpful. That's where I end up, you know, when we see those, we start referring to, you know, our functional medicine or naturopathics practitioners to get the inflammatory sources, whether it's a food allergy or it's mold, or I don't even want to get into all the things, but you guys get to go in there and figure that, unlock that puzzle. The second thing we may find too, that the ENT might not be able to see through a fiber optic scope, would be presence of pathology in the sinuses. So maxillary sinuses can often be very, very plugged. Now, maybe that's allergies, maybe that's something. It's not necessarily my job to figure that out, but it can be a problem that we want addressed and diagnosed prior to, you know, because if there's that much inflammation, we're going to have a really tough time breathing through the nose. So we want to then get somebody else on board to help with that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. We don't want to be doing things like mouth taping children or, you know, forcing them to breathe through their noses if we don't know that they even can, because they
can. Yeah, there is any number of pathologies there that are not super common, but could be present. And yeah, you don't want to mouth tape someone that can't breathe through their nose. So a good diagnosis is always the important, you know, the most important part of treatment.
Have you read that book Breath by James Nestor?
I have.
I love that book. I'll put it in the show notes as well. I think it's a really good, it's very, it doesn't go super deep into any of these topics, but I think it does a really good job of capturing a lot of the different dynamics that go into breath and breathing, breath work, you know, nasal breathing, mouth breathing, this bit about like chewing hard foods and tongue posture and all sorts of different things. And about chewing hard foods too, one thing that I had never really, until that book, had never connected that idea to the Weston A. Price information. And if you're not familiar with Weston A. Price, he was a dentist back in the day who traveled around to these different cultures and saw that, yeah, their jaws were wide and their teeth came in. They had room for their wisdom teeth. They had these nice wide sinuses. And then what was their diet? What was the nutrition like? And how was it producing these children, not only who had maybe the predisposition to be able to have this type of a body and facial outline and plan to the way that it was going to develop, but then continuing to support that development because of the ways that they were eating these different foods. And in James Nestor's book, one of the things that he talks about is, you know, like oatmeal and porridge and soft bread and soft crackers and all the different things that we're eating now in this modern day, and all tons of processed foods, and we're not really eating even the whole real food. And it also brings me back to, this is again one of my specialties, the ways that I'm always thinking about things, is the benefit of baby-led weaning. Even just in that first 6 months, as baby's teeth are coming in, as they're you know, between 6 and 12 or 6 and 18 months, whatever it is, those early days of feeding, to be giving them full foods that, you know, they don't have to have teeth to be able to eat quite a bit. And they can gnash and mash things with their jaws. And this is all these little micro moments of muscle strengthening and a little bit of torque and a little bit of pressure that's going to put a little bit more developmental growth pressure on the bone. And all of these things, just they come together. I think it's always helpful for me whenever I'm making a decision in modern day is to think about history, right? Like, well, what we were not mashing things to an absolute liquid throughout all history. It just wasn't happening. And now when we are, we're seeing these repercussions. And of course, that's only just one level of it. It's all very high sugar and all the things. But that book, I think, is really, really good for somebody who's looking for more resources about this. The Weston A. Price Foundation also has a lot of nutritional information that's interesting. Do you guys learn about Weston A. Price in dental school, or probably not, I would guess?
No.
No. Okay.
There's some other things that would,
there's a lot of controversy there.
Somewhat controversial. Yeah.
Yes.
But, it's super interesting. We part of our protocol is to increase chewing forces. And cause I don't think it's not possible to get, well, it is possible. It's challenging to get completely raw, hard food, similar to Paleolithic times. So part of our protocol, we use habit trainers and to do chewing forces with those. And that helps to, one, position the tongue in the proper space. And then also we have active kind of cyclic chewing on those, similar to that. Now, one thing that's interesting too is as you bite down, if you're eating something really soft and your teeth touch, you're not going to bite as hard. So you're not going to stimulate that bone. A lot of the harder things, if you're chewing on a carrot or something fibrous, the teeth actually don't come together all the way. And so that develops more bone if you get that. But if you've got a soft peanut butter jelly sandwich, you're going right through it and the teeth touch, your body says, oh, we're going to hurt the teeth. So it kind of backs off the chewing force. So it is important to have those kind of, like I said, the mastic gum. That's what people are kind of trying to hack and get, that chewing force where they're not actually coming all the way together. But it's super helpful.
Okay. So you said habit trainer. So for people who don't know what that is, can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, there's a variety of them out there that we use. MyoBrace, MyoMunchies, which are great for little ones to kind of start the chewing habit there. Healthy Start, Vivos, there's a number of them out there, right? And they basically are a certain size that they're various sizes, and you make measurements to see which one is right for the kids. And kind of the process we use is to put them in and then bite down for about 10 to 15 seconds and then relax while keeping your lips closed and your tongue in the right position. And then do that, for about 15 minutes at a time. Again, the benefit is you can't thrust the tongue to the side or forward with these devices in there. So it helps with tongue posture and then also with that extra chewing force. Myofunctional therapists have other various chewing exercises you can do. So that's where mewing comes into the kind of biting forces. There's just trying to put force on the teeth to grow bone is the whole idea behind it.
And it's not, so sometimes I feel like they're marketed that they are palate expanders, but they're not really, right?
Yeah. I mean the term palate expansion is challenging, right? I think probably the only true palate expander is that little key thing that people turn and expand, right? Cause the dental arch can be affected by these, which is the position of the teeth and the bones. And we certainly see bone growth as we use ALF or even these habit trainers, but that's because we're turbocharging natural bone growth through doing the things that grow bone.
Okay.
Yeah, palate expansion is a misunderstanding. I mean, it's used a lot, but I think it's we'll call it natural palate expansion.
Right. Okay. Because ALF does expand the width of the palate.
Well, it's not opening the suture. So that's the suture. We're trying to grow bone through increasing the forces that grow bone. And then the ALF, in my opinion, facilitates or kind of turbocharges that through the light forces.
But it's better.
We certainly see lots of palate expansion with it, but it's not in and of itself a palate expansion device.
I see. Okay. But, and it's more ideal to not open that suture, correct?
In my opinion, I think that's true, but it kind of depends. It's a case dependent thing. Sometimes it may be, so ALF will be a slower device. So if you do have a kid who maybe has severe sleep apnea, maybe it's appropriate to open that palate right away. Right. Cause you've got to do treatment really quickly, and ALF's not going to give that in the same, with the same amount of speed. So there's certainly, and there's all, when we do an evaluation, there's a lot of things that we look at. Are the parents willing to do the myofunctional therapy? Do they want to, see an osteopath? Do they want to do the things that you're going to look at? Are they going to eliminate the sugar, the dyes, all that kind of stuff that plays a role in kind of healthy breathing too? Because excessive sugar consumption causes inflammation. Inflammation makes it hard to breathe through your nose. So you've got to kind of be willing to do the whole thing. So it takes a pretty committed patient to kind of get the maximum results out of ALF, I would say. But in my opinion, I feel like that's the optimal choice. The optimal treatment method is to do that.
Right. Because it's trying to align things back on track with what would happen naturally, right?
Yes. That's that, again, my opinion, and I don't do some of the other treatments, and I've seen patients that have had fantastic results with them, but
yeah,
I've had good success with most of my ALF patients. And in the best patients, it's when we get that kind of full buy-in on changing everything and working through the whole kind of the whole body, the whole system, every part of health.
Yeah. And it really is such a time commitment for time, money, energy, resources, all the things for parents to be doing all this stuff. And I get it, obviously, because I have four kids, you have three. It's like, how do we do all of this? And at the same time, trying to balance knowing, if we can give our kids sort of this best start to their life, they're going to end up being healthier adults. And just the way that the population has taken a turn and the level of chronic disease and illness that we have, it's, I do think it's important, but yeah, it's not a perfect system because it's not accessible to everybody and it is time consuming. It's like, I wish that we could just all be born perfectly and have everything work out.
Yeah.
But, it would be really nice, right? But we do, it is an option. And so I just wanted to thank you so much for coming on today and, sharing your wisdom with us. All of your information will be linked in the show notes in case people locally to the Treasure Valley of Boise wanted to find you, but also so that they can learn more about what your office is doing and ALF and different things. And many of the different resources we've mentioned will be there as well. Was there anything else that you wanted to end with?
Yeah, I guess I was saying, going back to it, I started with adults in sleep apnea, and a lot of those patients in sleep apnea, they're either tied to a CPAP or they're dealing with the side effects of it and the health side effects. And it's challenging. So, I mean, it's hard to go through this process, but in my opinion, well worth it. And we have a lot of patients that even as adults, they've seen benefit from, getting their tongue in the right position, doing all the hard work. It's kind of like going to the gym. You go to the gym, you're going to get stronger over time. You stop going to the gym, you're not going to, things can change throughout life. But as kids, if we can get them on the right start, I think it's going to improve, brain development, sleep quality, like all these things that are, it's hard, but it's so important. Like in my opinion, the best thing you can do for your kid is get them balanced and being able to breathe and sleep properly and have proper, nervous system balance, like all that stuff. And this doing ALF and myofunctional therapy and all that. And then along with, healthy diet and getting all the vitamins, nutrients, all the things you need, really gives them such a huge advantage and head start in life that they're not having to play catch up. So it's hard, but it is so worth it.
Well, and it's pick your hard. Like, do you want to pick your hard now as the parent doing this with your children, or do you want them to have the hard later on when they have sleep apnea and obesity and heart disease and all the different things? And you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, or even in childhood, all those, the sleep apnea happens. Yeah. And it makes it, then you're plenty of kids we've had that have had learning difficulties. We get them breathing better. Then that makes that part of their life so much easier, and even like behavior stuff, anger management issues, if they're not sleeping and they're not in balance, then that's another different kind of hard. That's even worse in my opinion.
Right. And parenting children that are not well, that don't feel good, that don't have this ability, children, of course they're challenging, right? Like this is it.
Yes.
Their brains are immature, but it should not be this like extraordinarily harrowing event, right? Like, and so if it is, maybe there is something to be looking into deeper for your child. And I see that, I saw that all the time in the pediatric office that I was in, which was, these behavior issues. And then we do a stool analysis and there's something crazy going on in the gut, or like an oral assessment and there's something happening there too. So yeah, really good point. It's doing the best that we can by our children for your life to be easier, for their life to be easier. And, you know, at the end of the day, we just have to do the best that we can. So thank you.
Exactly. Yep.
Thank you so much for coming on, and I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Kids get sick. It's natural and normal. And there are things we can do to support their immune systems naturally that help not only with symptoms, but the progression of the illness. I've made a course that highlights all of my top immune support remedies and home care methods to support your children, from newborns all the way through to big kids. I discuss herbs, homeopathics, nutraceutical supplements, targeted nutrients, using nature as medicine, hydrotherapy practices at home, and more. The Winter is Coming webinar is a natural cold and flu course for kiddos that you'll want to revisit again and again. Find the link in the show notes.
Before you go, there's one last thing. Did you know that we have a swag store now? The Healthy as a Mother store, where we sell amazing merchandise that is fun to wear. We have shirts and hats and sweatshirts. We have drinkware, bags, journals, all of the things that are healthy as a mother or related to motherhood in general. We would love if you could support our podcast by checking out our store. We love doing what we do, and it's really helpful to get the support and also to spread the word and share our amazing brand with the world. And you get some really cool, awesome stuff. One of my favorites is the crop sweatshirt and one of our glasses that we sell that says Healthy as a Mother. I just think it's so great. So head to www.healthyasamother.com/store to check out what we have. Again, that is healthyasamother.com/store. And we are absolutely open to feedback. If there's something you would like to see that is not at the store, we can make a lot of different things there. So head over there, check it out, and we would love to see you sporting some Healthy as a Mother gear. And if you take a picture of yourself on Instagram, definitely tag Dr. Morgan and I, and we will be sure to share. Again, that is healthyasamother.com/store to check out our merchandise.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.